Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is 9:05 here on this Wednesday morning, the 8th day of August 2018. And I'm John Reed. Glad you're with us here on Richmond's Morning News on News Radio WRVA. Our monthly visit with the governor of Virginia takes place today for the next hour, and I'd like to invite you to call in and chat with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Here's the telephone number, 345-1140, 345-1140, if you've got something on your mind. Now, I always say this, you know, politics has got everybody riled up these days, and we're headed towards midterm elections congressionally in November, so, you know, you can call. If you're mad about something, it's fine for you to call, but we keep it classy, and we do it the Virginia way here. You can ask a pointed question in a pointed way, but, you know, no attacking anybody on this program, at least while I'm running it. And we welcome your calls, though, 345-1140, if you've got thoughts or comments or questions for Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. And Governor, we do appreciate you joining us every month. We know we're one of the two radio stations in Virginia that get a chance to sit down with you every month, and I appreciate your willingness to come in and sit down and take these phone calls and take these questions.
Well, I appreciate being here, John, and it's always good to hear from your listeners. And good things are happening in Virginia. You know, yesterday I was out at Redskins Park.
I saw that. How was it?
Yeah, looking over the team. They're looking good. They're healthy. I talked to Bruce Allen, and he's optimistic. So I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction. The Redskins are scrimmaging or are playing a preseason game tomorrow night against the Patriots. I'm predicting they're going to end up against the Patriots in the Super Bowl and win by 10 this year.
You're really going out on
it. Oh, yeah.
This is an extension of what you predicted yesterday.
That's right.
All right. Well, I just heard some cheers from the other side of this building. And, you know, Bruce Allen and my old boss, George Allen, will be. This is a bipartisan moment here for
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely. Okay? Absolutely. We talked yesterday some about, you know, the Redskins are looking for a new stadium, and we'd certainly like to have them up in Virginia. We have a lot of fans in Virginia that pull for the Redskins. Of course, you know, there are a lot that pull for other teams as well, but that's why, you know, we're a diverse state, so we welcome that.
I saw the picture of the stadium in the Times-Dispatch story that ran on that. What are the chances that that's actually going to come through? And that's for 2027. That's way down the road, right?
Yeah, exactly. You and I will probably be in a rocking chair somewhere when that happens. But, you know, I think we have a good chance. And we talked some about it yesterday that, you know, we're inclusive in Virginia. A lot of fans in Virginia certainly support the Redskins. We've done a lot to help with transportation. You know, that's certainly important, the egress of being able to get the fans to and from the stadium. So, you know, I think we've got a good chance. They're obviously looking at you know, keeping the stadium potentially in Washington or Maryland. So they're looking at all three areas.
Yeah. Well, that would be good news for Virginia to
absolutely
have that focus and, you know, every Sunday, everybody paying attention to us. Now, listen, I got to talk to you about something that everyone was paying attention to Virginia a year ago when that rally took place at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. The discussion was originally about the removal of the Confederate memorials in Charlottesville, and then it degenerated into a conflict between some rabble-rousers who were pro-Confederacy. I don't know if they're pro-nationalists. That's what white nationalists. That's what's been said. And then the Antifa crowd. And it was really at the end of it, we had one dead person, and it was a black eye for the state. The rally may not happen in Charlottesville. There's no permit issued for it, as I understand it. But I guess everybody's still on edge. What do you anticipate this weekend? And do you think the state and the city will work together and be a little better prepared this year than compared to last year?
Well, John, it was a tremendous tragedy. And as most folks remember, a beautiful city of Charlottesville, a wonderful University of Virginia. Our daughter actually graduated from there in 13. And, you know, a group of white supremacists marched in with their torches and banners and weapons and spewing hatred and bigotry. And, I was there last year the day after and just made sure people understood that we don't condone that in Virginia. We told those folks that came in that were spewing hatred and bigotry, that they weren't welcome to go home and don't come back to Virginia. So we learned a lot from last year, John, and so we have made a lot of modifications. We've had a lot of great discussions. I think people can be reassured in Virginia that we have a collaborative effort between the city of Charlottesville, our law enforcement, our Department of Emergency Management, our National Guard. Everybody has been involved, and we feel like we're very well prepared. If anything happens in Charlottesville like it did last year, there will actually be a press conference this afternoon at 3 o'clock to review some of the plans that we have made to prepare for this. And I would say, you know, not only did we lose the life of Heather Heyer, we also lost two of our state police. And they were, you know, in surveillance in a helicopter that went down. And we don't ever want to relive that tragedy again.
You know, I'm loathe to do the hindsight is 2020 or to be critical of police officers. But do you feel like the state police in cooperation with the Charlottesville police, I mean, somebody dropped the ball last year, and I don't want to relitigate it, but do you think they are both committed to allowing people to exercise their right to protest and make sure that there isn't this confrontation that occurred last time? I mean, are they 100% focused on that?
Absolutely, John. And, we want to make sure that we are able to support people that believe in the First Amendment, that want to make their opinions known. But we want to do it peacefully. Mm-hmm. In the event that it's not peacefully done, we're prepared. And, we did learn lessons from last year. And there's been a lot of discussion, again, between the city of Charlottesville and our state police, our local police agents, our first responders. So we're confident, and I think if people are interested to tune in this afternoon at 3 o'clock, they'll see that they can be reassured that we're going to keep people safe this year.
And in this case, it's not just Charlottesville. The rally that may actually be larger and take place and get a lot of attention will be outside of the White House, but that could involve people on the Metro. And, of course, Virginia has a stake in that. What was your assessment of the idea of separating the groups and a private car for the protesters? I guess that's not going to happen now. But
well, we have prepared for that as well. Yeah. And to you make a great point that if something happens in Washington, it can easily affect Northern Virginia. And so, you know, we've had those discussions, and I know there have been voices of how people can get there transportation-wise, and I think they can use the usual means of transportation, but I don't think anybody's going to go out of their way to accommodate some of these groups. So we're prepared in Charlottesville, we're prepared in Northern Virginia, and then obviously next weekend there's also some talk about some folks coming back to Richmond, so we're paying close attention to that as well.
This isn't unconnected, but what did you think this weekend when you picked up the paper and saw that red paint on the Lee monument on Monument Avenue? You all had the responsibility for cleaning it off. The state did.
Absolutely. The Capitol Police monitor that. That's owned by the people of Virginia. And, you know, I certainly can support people's First Amendment rights to make their opinions known. But when there's vandalism involved, we don't condone that. So, as you know, we have a $1,000 reward to find the individuals that were responsible for that. And, make sure that justice is done when we find them. But that costs the state about $5,000. So, all of these things, when people vandalize, we certainly don't condone that. And we're going to do everything that we can to keep that from happening.
I was surprised by one of the quotes in the paper the next morning from one of the leaders of the mayor's commission, who said, well, this is what happened. I think I'm paraphrasing correctly. This is what happens when you don't listen to the people in your community and you don't allow them to take control of their own situation. I don't know whether I was angry by that quote or I just thought it was a little hostile.
Again, John, we obviously encourage folks to make their opinions known in a peaceful manner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't consider spraying or throwing paint on statues of peaceful. That's
yeah, but let's say the statues stay up. Forgive me for interrupting, but let's say the statues stay up. Are we going to just constantly stay in this cycle where people either protest, which is one thing, or, you know, they feel empowered to vandalize to try to make their point? Is that going to be acceptable?
Well, I think people can always protest. Mm-hmm. And again, if they do it peacefully, that's fine. I would remind folks that in this day and age, There are cameras in a lot of different places, and so hopefully that will make people think twice before they do something like this, because I can promise you that if we catch these folks, they're going to end up in jail.
I appreciate it. All right. Well, thanks for answering those questions. We've got a lot of callers on the line already. 345-1140, 345-1140. I promise when we come back from this break, we will go to your calls and give you the opportunity to ask questions directly to Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam here on Ask the Governor, News Radio 1140 WRVA. Back here live in the WRVA studios in Richmond, Virginia, as we continue our Ask the Governor program. Once a month, Virginia's governor joins us live here to take your calls and answer questions from citizens all across Central Virginia. And Ralph Northam is here in the studio today, prepared to do just that. 345-1140, 345-1140, if you'd like to join this conversation. We have a number of people who have already called in today. And let's begin with Libby, who's been holding. Libby, you're on the air with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Well, hi. Hi, everybody. Yes, I'll go ahead and get to the point. I'm trying to understand our public education system still after 50 years. It's not getting any better, Governor. Can we possibly do away with the whole department and, like, start over? I mean, we're all in the internet world now. Can the kids get it online? Can we make these giant learning centers where we feed them breakfast, lunch, and dinner and take care of all their needs while their family's doing whatever, and get them into, like, a trade school right away, like in middle school? I mean, things are not getting better in our public school systems, and especially over in Brunswick County and all these little third world little counties we have to live in. So thank you for answering that.
Libby, thank you so much for calling in. And, you know, education is something that is a really a top priority of mine and our administration. My wife, as you may know, is a K-5 science teacher. And there's no doubt that we need to look at how we're educating our children. But I will tell you, we have some good people in place. We've done a lot of work in the last few years with SOL reform. We need to stop teaching our children how to take multiple choice tests. They need to think creatively. And I think to your point, and you make an excellent point, let's jump outside of the box, if you will, and talk about how we train our youth for 21st century jobs. And they are much different from when perhaps you and I were growing up. And first of all, to identify those as, you know, what I call STEAM-H, science, technology, engineering, the arts, math, and healthcare, things like cybersecurity, unmanned aerial systems, biotechnology, data collection, data analysis. These are the jobs of the 21st century. A couple points I would make. We need to make sure that our colleges and universities are affordable for all Virginians. That's something that I am committed to doing. Number two is that we need to get past the stigma. There are a ton of available jobs right now where one doesn't need a four-year college education. So we need to get past that and make sure that we're bringing skills to jobs. We've got 23 great community college systems. We've got apprenticeships. But I will tell you, Libby, that what I hear every day, and I just came back from a trade mission in Europe, is that if we can train the workforce, then businesses in Virginia will grow and businesses will want to come to Virginia. So to your point, let's sit down and have a good discussion on how we prepare our youth for these 21st century jobs. And that's something I'm committed to doing.
Do you see the story the other day about how the city of Richmond's trying to fill 85 jobs before school starts in September? I mean, that's a lot of teacher positions. I don't know about the city, but I know some of my friends who used to be teachers who've left the profession have said they just can't deal with the kids running roughshod over them, and they feel like the kids know they run the school instead of the teachers. I'm assuming your wife doesn't feel that way. She can say, hey, my husband's the governor. You better straighten up. But
John, I would tell you, I'm an educator as well. I teach at the medical school level, but teaching is a hard job. And I just a couple weeks ago, I went into a classroom and taught an AP class in biology. And, you know, I did it for an hour, and to think about doing that for 6 hours every day and you know, making sure that we're taking care of our children's needs, their families' needs. But let me tell you where the rubber meets the road with teachers. Right now, our teachers in Virginia are getting paid on average about $9,200 less than the national average. And so if you're going to recruit talented teachers and be able to retain them, first of all, we've got to start paying them. We talk about all these, you know, high-paying jobs that are out there and technology, but someone's got to train our children to do those jobs. So I think Virginia has to make sure that paying our teachers is a priority, and it is certainly for me. Last year in our budget, we gave a 3% raise to our teachers, but we've still got a lot of work to do. And, we've got some revenue coming into Virginia this year. The internet sales tax is going to add about $300 million. So let's invest these dollars wisely in our future. And our future is our children.
Yeah, the paycheck does matter, no question. Hey, Roy is holding, keeping with our theme here of education. Roy, you're on the air with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Thank you. Governor, you just mentioned this is a follow-up on the fact of having colleges and universities well-funded for our, quote, Virginia students, unquote. And yet, though, you have schools that are bringing more and more state schools kids from out of state and depriving kids with equal SATs and so forth of slots in the state schools. So what's your answer to that? I mean, Virginia Tech just said they want 60% of their students to be from a diverse population. So I'd be interested in that.
Roy, you and I need to sit down and have a chat because we're on the same sheet of music. And one of my pet peeves, and, you know, Pam and I raised two children, and it is very competitive for our children to get into our great schools in Virginia. So why is that? Well, you know, when the state continues to whittle down the support that we put toward higher education, for an example, 10 years ago, the state support for VMI, where I went to school, was about 33-34%. Now it's less than 15%. We can't continue to move in that direction. And what happens when we do that, the schools react by doing one of two things, or both. One is that they raise tuition because they need the funding. The second is that they take more out-of-state students because they can charge higher tuition. And I agree with you. We need to fund our higher education better in Virginia so that we can give our students, folks that have worked and raised their families in Virginia, they should get first dibs at our colleges and universities. And just to close out, Roy, I think diversity is a good thing. You know, I think we need to invite folks from other states and other countries into our colleges and universities. But let's give our children, our Virginia children, top priority.
Thomas is holding. You're on the air now with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning, John.
Hi.
Hi. Governor, I'd like to ask you about health care costs.
Yes.
The Trump administration just, I believe, passed a law or a rule that says that hospitals must post their prices online, which seems to me is a good first step in lowering the cost of health care costs. One other that bothers me at the state level is the necessity for new hospitals and new imaging centers to get certified by the state on something called a certificate of public need. It seems to me that retards competition because all of these bigger companies like Hospital Corporation of America and Bon Secours can then petition to say there isn't a public need. Where do you stand on the necessity of these certificates of public need, and what can we do at the state level if you see it's a problem? What can we do at the state level to address it?
Absolutely, Thomas. That's a great question. It is a little bit complicated, and I'll try not to get too much into the weeds. But to your point, if a clinic or a hospital or a surgical center wants to open up a new practice, they have to go through our Commissioner of Health and apply. And that's called Certificate of Public Need. You're exactly right about that. You know, I've told the legislators that I wanted to expand health care in Virginia, which they cooperated with me this past year. We've given access to close to 400,000 working Virginians. Step two in that process is to address certificate of need. And I would look at it, Thomas, as more of a hybrid. I don't think we need to just get rid of certificate of need altogether, but we do need to make some modifications. And that's something that I plan to work on. I understand that as a physician, and I appreciate your concern.
Yeah, that is a tough issue and a little more complicated than that, the 60 seconds we gave you to answer. When we come back, we'll continue with your calls. Plus, I want to ask the governor his reaction to the election results around the country last night. Is this a referendum on Donald Trump? What does it mean for the future of the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, as we head towards elections here in Virginia? And are our ballots safe here in the Commonwealth. We'll talk about it when we return on News Radio WRVA. 9:35 here on this Wednesday morning, the 8th day of August, 2018. I'm John Reed, and glad you're with us here on News Radio WRVA for our monthly sit-down with Virginia's governor, Ralph Northam, in the studio here, live in Richmond. And we're pleased to be able to offer you the chance to call in and ask questions or offer comments to the governor at 345-1140, 345-1140. And, Governor, I wanted to start as we come back from that break with your assessment of the election results last night. I mean, everybody's going to debate if it's a tight election in a district that Republicans have usually done well in, and Donald Trump won with 11 points, but the Republicans barely eking it out. Do you think that this is a referendum on the president and his personality, the president and his policy agenda? And what is your assessment as a Democrat, Governor, for your party's prospects when we get to November this year?
Well, sir, it was interesting to watch last night, and a couple of things I would say. First of all, there are a record number of women running, not only for these congressional seats, but for gubernatorial seats. So that's been interesting to watch. What I sense, John, when I talk and listen to folks is, you know, I think there are people out there that are concerned about some of the policies and the way that policies are being made right now in Washington. But more importantly, you know, I think people are looking for a change, and they're looking for leaders who will listen. And the priorities that I hear, again, as I travel across the Commonwealth, number one is that people want a job that they can support themselves and their families with. And so, you know, workforce training is obviously very important. They want to make sure that their children, you know, we all want our children to do well. So they want to make sure their children have access to a world-class education system. And they want to know that they have access to affordable and quality health care. These are all things that are very important. And so I think that candidates that will go out there and meet with folks at the door, meet with them in the coffee shop, and really listen to what's on their mind, those are the ones that are going to be successful. And I think that's what we'll see as we get into the midterms this year.
Well, the first thing you said on your list was the job issue. I mean, hadn't Donald Trump kind of delivered for Americans on that?
Well, I think our economy in general, I'm going to be a little bit biased and say that, you know, the important work for our economy happens at the state level. And, you know, we've done a lot of things in Virginia. As you know, our unemployment rate now is at 3.2%. It's the lowest it's been in over 10 years. Virginia just recently was named the fourth state in this great country of ours in which to do business. I want us to be number one. But a lot happens at the state level. And back to your original question, just the way that policy is being formed. I know how things work in my administration, but the best way of making policy is not through your Twitter account. It's to listening to people, talking to your staff, talking about how you're going to message your policy and then moving forward. So I think people are taking note of that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the state level, when we get to these November elections, Virginia will be running our congressional elections without the influence or the dominance of the federal government telling us how to do that.
Right.
What can you say to voters who are hearing the stories about the Russian, the possibility of Russians influencing the elections, and the real concern about the integrity of not just our voter lists, but the actual balloting on Election Day? What is Virginia doing to make sure we're out in front of that?
Great question, John. And, you know, we would encourage everybody across Virginia to register and to vote. That's really what makes democracy strong. And then we want to make sure that every vote counts, and that other countries, particularly Russia, are not involved in our election process. And so we have a paper trail in Virginia. We're one of several states that do that. We've also—
So you keep a record
of
the vote.
We do.
Is that required?
No, it's not. It is in Virginia that's the way we have chosen to do things. I have put a new person in charge, Chris Piper, in charge of our Department of Elections. He's doing a great job. We just recently had a JLARC study. I've had communication with folks on both sides of the aisle looking at the recommendations from the JLARC committee. So, again, to your point, I think we've made a lot of changes for the better, and we want to make sure that every vote in Virginia counts.
You don't think the Russians or any other outside third party could come in and delete names from the voter rolls and cause all sort of chaos from that? You think you've prevented, put in firewalls to try to prevent that?
Well, we're doing everything we can to prevent that, John. But, I mean, the technology is such out there, and there's mm-hmm. some people that want to get into our electorate system. So we're on the lookout for it. And, again, we've made a lot of changes, and we're doing everything that we can to make sure that every vote counts in Virginia.
I want to make sure we get to some of our callers who have dialed 345-1140 to ask questions of the governor. And let's see. Let's go to John who's been holding. John, you're on the air with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Hey, good morning, Governor.
Good morning, John.
You know, I tuned in probably about 20 minutes after, and I listened to you talk about three big government spending programs, you know, free health care, increasing funding to public colleges, and increases in tuition to teachers. How are you going to pay for that, Governor? I mean, I'm a taxpayer. Am I going to foot the bill, and how much am I going to have to pay?
In all fairness, John, I appreciate your call, but I don't believe I've made any comments this morning about free health care. I talked about making sure that Virginians have access to affordable and quality care. And as you know, we've just expanded coverage to up to 400,000. I want to underline for you working. These are working Virginians that can't afford health care, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be free. We also want to make sure that, you know, Virginians have access to a world-class education system, that we know there is power in every child, and I'm sensitive to what you're saying, John. I will tell you that Virginia, as far as our expenditures, we're very lean. Our taxes are low compared to other states, and we want to invest what we have responsibly. But we do need to make investments in health care and in transportation and education, and I can tell you the way I've run my household, the way I've run my business, I am fiscally responsible, and so I don't anticipate using your tax money unwisely. I'm very sensitive to that, but I appreciate the call.
Diana is holding. Diana, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Diana, and I'm from Cumberland, Virginia. The family median income in Cumberland is about $36,000 a year. We're a very poor county. Although our income is low, our tax rates are some of the highest in the Commonwealth of Virginia for personal property taxes. So my question is a follow-up to what John was saying. Would you support tax increases to cover the cost of teacher raises and university tuitions being held at a lower rate?
Diana, thank you for the call, and you're in a beautiful section of Virginia. I don't think we need to raise taxes. I have never advocated for that. What is happening in Virginia right now is that our economy is doing very, very well. As I said, our unemployment rate is at 3.2. It's the lowest it's been in over 10 years. We're fourth in the country on states in which are best to do business in. And so we have some pretty significant revenue, additional revenue that's coming into Virginia. I'm very proud of that. And I think we need to have a discussion with people like you. How do we best invest that? Do we return some to the taxpayers? So there are a lot of options on the table. But I can tell you that Virginia is doing very well. We balance our budget each year. That's a bipartisan effort. And I'll just close on your call by saying that, you know, we believe in the Virginia way. That's what I have brought into Richmond as governor, is that we can agree to disagree, but at the end of the day, we work together and do what's in the best interest of Virginia.
All right. When we come back, Governor, I'd like to switch back to politics for just a second. Of course, we'll take more calls at 345-1140. But, you know, you're the leader of your party here in Virginia. And when you ran last year, you kind of positioned yourself as a moderate. If I were you, gosh, I'd be looking at my national party thinking we've got all these socialists going around almost trying to take over the party. At least there's an active conversation amongst Democrats about those issues. Does that give you pause? Are you concerned about whether your party is being hijacked? I'll let you answer that question when we come back from the break. And of course, we'll take more calls. If you got a question for Ralph Northam, call us right now, 345-1140. We're back with more on News Radio WRVA in a moment. 9:49 here on this Wednesday morning, the 8th day of August. And once a month, Virginia's governor joins us here live in the studio in Richmond to talk to the people of Central Virginia and get comments and questions from you directly. If you'd like to join the conversation in our final 10 minutes here, call 345-1140, 345-1140. And Governor, before I go to the callers who were holding, let me follow up on what I mentioned on our way out. Gosh, I mean, am I exaggerating or being partisan when I say it seems like a lot of full-on socialists are attempting to take over your party? Are you worried about that? You positioned yourself as kind of a moderate when you ran, and a lot of the things I'm hearing from national Democrats aren't very moderate positions.
You know, John, I ran a very progressive campaign in 2017. We talked about jobs. We talked about education, health care, safe communities, clean environments. We have a big tent in the Democratic Party, and there's a lot of discussion going on. But the way I approach this is, you know, I've always felt very secure in what I believed in, but I'm very open-minded to listen to other folks' thoughts and ideas. And so that's why I'm comfortable being where I am. Again, Virginians right now, I believe, want someone who's leading this state who's fiscally responsible. That's where I am. I think they want less government in their lives, and I certainly believe in that as well. So I'm comfortable with our party. Obviously, there are always going to be discussions on, you know, what the issues are that are important to folks. But again, at the end of the day, for Virginians, people want a job. They want their children to have education. They want access to health care. And they want an inclusive Virginia, and that's what I believe in, and that's way, the way I'll move forward.
All right. Gilbert is holding. I want to make sure we get to the callers who've been on here for a little while holding. Gilbert, you're on the line with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to ask the governor really quickly. He mentioned three things. He said something about revenue. He said something about jobs. And he said something about clean air, healthy environment. I have been poisoned out of every job I've ever had because of the dirty drug deal and filthy tobacco companies. I just want to know, when is he and every other elected official in Virginia, all the way down to city councils, going to put those murderous, filthy drug dealers out of business? Because they have more than a defective product. They have a product that sticks to everything. It cannot be removed. I've been washing clothes that's golden, underwear, socks, and everything that I cannot get the nicotine out of, and I'm on disability, and I am trapped in my house. I can't even go out to get groceries because people are lighting cigarettes by you, and they think they have the right to poison you because they've been given that right unconstitutionally by Virginia to poison you.
Gilbert, I appreciate your question, and as a physician, I can certainly relate to your concerns. As you may remember, back in 08, I actually carried the legislation to ban smoking in our restaurants. It was finally passed and signed into law by Governor Kane in 2009. So we are doing a lot to decrease the exposure to second and actually third-hand smoke, which, as you said, just gets in your clothes and on curtains, carpets, etc. I think the other issue that maybe you touched on is our opioid crisis. And, you know, we're doing everything that we can to make sure that if there are individuals across the Commonwealth that have an issue with addiction, or they know someone in their family, friend, et cetera, we want them to know that there's help. And I'm traveling around to all the medical schools as a physician, talking to our students, our residents, our providers on more innovative ways of dealing with both acute and chronic pain. So a lot is happening in that regard as well. But we want to make sure that Virginia stays healthy. And I'll do everything that I can as a governor and a physician to make sure that that happens.
Governor, we've invited people to contact us on Twitter and on Facebook to ask questions, too. And I want to make sure that they know that we're paying attention to what they're sending us. This one's kind of a loaded question, I warn you, from Twitter regarding the pipelines. Dear Governor, does Dominion Energy have pictures of you, or is it just giving you a blank load of money for selling out our state's environment? I think we're talking about the pipeline here, and that's certainly a legitimate topic to bring up. And you know, I ask people to keep it classy here, but I mean, there are a lot of people who are really angry about the pipeline issue. What's your reaction?
Absolutely, John, and I'm very sensitive to these folks. And as I travel across the Commonwealth, I've had discussions with a lot of them, and I listen to their concerns. Let me hopefully reassure Virginians and the folks that are coming in through your social media. This pipeline will not, I repeat, it will not move forward unless it's done using the law and using science. And as the caller or the inquirer may know, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, that the building of that has been halted. And there are also have been some recent rulings on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. We need, and I will continue to support our regulatory agencies. We work with the DEQ in Virginia. We are making sure that every stream in Virginia is looked at. And if there are concerns about it, they're being addressed. And so as we move forward, as I said earlier, it will not be built unless it's done with environmental regulations, with property rights in mind. This has been my position all along. I have confidence in our DEQ. I have confidence in the Corps of Engineers. And most recently, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that what we're doing, what our DEQ is doing in Virginia, is by the book. And they supported that. And that's the way we'll move forward.
This guy who wrote to us seems really hostile. Do you have confidence in Dominion? Do you think they are trying? I mean, they want the pipeline, but do you think they are trying to do the right thing by Virginia and environmental standards also?
You know, I'm not here, John, to speak for Dominion, but it is important that we have competitive energy rates in Virginia as we move our economy forward. And something that I'm very pleased about, and I've worked closely with Dominion, is our movement toward renewable energy. And we just had an announcement in Norfolk last week. Two wind turbines are going up off the coast of Virginia. We had the potential to put in 2,000 megawatts of wind energy off of our coast. That will energize 500,000 homes across Virginia. They are committed to 3,000 megawatts of renewable energy by the end of my term. So, so we're working with Dominion. We're working with other energy companies, working with winds, solar, working toward renewable energy. At the end of the day, we want to provide clean energy for Virginia at certainly a competitive cost.
I'm looking at the clock and we're running out of time. Let me go to Pete, who's holding. You got a question about Redskins Stadium. We started with the Redskins. Might as well get close to ending with it.
Yeah, real quick, Governor, I'm hoping you're going to tell me that you're not going to spend a penny of my tax dollars to support a multi-billion dollar enterprise. You've seen the studies. You're a smart man. These stadiums do not pay dividends to the taxpayers. They are a waste of money. Look at the Redskins deal the city of Richmond did. It's ridiculous, and I want you to please tell me and other Virginians, you're not going to invest a penny of our tax dollars to support this, again, billion-dollar business, especially when they don't make their employees stand up for the national anthem.
Pete, I hear your question. If you're still online, who's your team? Who do you follow?
Right now, one of my sons is a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I tell you, gotta love Jerry Jones. He's standing up and doing what's right for America, and he's told his employees, his players, if you don't stand and salute our military and our country, then you're out of a job, and that's the way it should be.
Pete, I appreciate your inquiry. Just to close out, I will tell you that no taxpayers' money in Virginia will go to support a new stadium, so you can be assured of that. But thanks for your call, and go Redskins.
Yeah, you know, people are hyped up about where, you know, they're kind of monitoring almost a line by line of this budget. Every time you've come on, we have gotten into the, I won't say minutia of the state budget, but, you know, a lot of concern about waste in government spending. That's going to wrap it up with Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam today. Sir, we always appreciate you joining us here at WRVA and taking calls, and we'll look forward to our September visit with you coming up next. That's also going to do it for us here on Richmond's Morning News. Hope you'll be back with us bright and early tomorrow morning from 5:30 to 10 here on News Radio WRVA.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.